Hello, hello. Welcome to Season 4 of the Chicago Techies Podcast, the show that highlights the voices of Chicago innovators and their journeys. This season, we're shining a spotlight on founders, from bootstrap beginnings to bold visions. We're diving into what it really takes to build right here in Chicago. I'm your host, Cecilia Benitez. Thanks for tuning in. Hey, Manuela, thanks for joining me on this week's episode of the Chicago Techies Podcast. How are you?
Hola, Cecilia. Great to be here with you. So fun. It's like a full circle. Here we are again.
3 years later, we were just talking about how the last time we sat down to catch up, it was in 2022 when I was going through my my Chicago Blend Fellowship. And I was totally new to the space and had like no idea what I was asking or what I was talking about. But full circle moment. So let's get started. Let's start with your name, your pronouns, where you're from, and your current role.
Great. Manuela Zonenstein. I'm the CEO and co-founder at Kadeya here in Chicago. And I was born in Brazil, moved to the States when I was 7 and moved around a bunch, but ended up in Evanston, Illinois for middle school and high school.
Oh,
left for 20 years and then came back 4 years ago to build Kadeya here in Chicago.
Nice. I moved to the States when I was 11. Where did you go first? Where have you been? All over the place, like you said.
Yeah, always university towns. My parents were professors. So Providence, Rhode Island, East Lansing, Michigan, and then Evanston, Illinois. So I'll let the listeners guess what universities my parents taught at.
Yeah. Awesome. So you mentioned already Kadeya, which I'm so excited to hear more about. Obviously, this is a podcast for founders, right? And for the founder journey. So we're going to kick it right off with that. What inspired you to start building Kadeya? Was there a specific moment or experience that sparked that idea?
I'd say it's a few, not quite moments, but maybe like patterns that kept coming up repeatedly in my life. The first is actually when I moved from Brazil to the US. I remember being so shocked at how much garbage we generated in the US.
Yeah. Yeah.
And I think I was lucky to have parents who supported me disagreeing with the world and noticing things and being observant. And so it was observing that. And I remember my second grade science fair project was a bus that ran on garbage. And my teacher was like, oh, that's cute. That'll never happen. And, you know, here we are now doing like waste to energy.
Yeah.
So I think it's first of all, just becoming aware of something and having the curiosity and the support to kind of question it and criticize it, being encouraged to try to think about why it's that way. And then the other moment I'd say is I had the opportunity to move to Beijing, China in 2007. Mm-hmm. And I ended up staying in China for 8 years. And in that time, the country went from a reuse country where you would fix your bikes up if it broke and you carried a reusable bottle throughout the day and filled it up and you patched your clothes up and you wore hand-me-downs. In 2007, and when I left in 2015, everything was single-use, linear economy, take, make, waste, including beverages. And when 1.4 billion people do something, you pay attention. And I noticed how much plastic and single-use waste that country started generating, and it really bothered me. And they ran out of landfill space by the time I left, and actually the United States then started having our garbage rejected by China. We used to send it to China. And in 2017, 2018, China passed a policy called the China National Sword that wouldn't take America's garbage anymore. So that's why we are now facing a waste problem, because we used to export it to China. So for me, led me to ask a question. Well, if we moved there from a circular economy to a linear economy, and the economy and the government created incentives to make that transition, why can't we make incentives to go the other way as well?
Yeah.
Right? It's not obvious. It's not necessary that we move from circular to linear. we can move from linear to circular. So yeah. That got my gears turning about kind of the big picture systems structures of single use. And then the other really exciting opportunity for me was I worked at Palantir Technologies, which is a big data software company. It was an incredible time, incredible experience leading up to the IPO. Mm-hmm. And I wasn't doing anything in my day job that was in sustainability. So to scratch my green itch, I worked with the kitchen staff to launch a reusable water bottle program at the company. And we ran that for 3 years. And I essentially, through that experience, building kind of Kadea 0.1, also came to understand why reusable bottles, as we've designed them, like your Yetis, your Swells, your Stanleys, they are not going to solve the single-use problem. They're great for a small slice of society. Yeah. And if you carry those reusables around, please keep doing it. That's really awesome. Unfortunately, that is not a scalable, repeatable model that it will be able to eventually overtake single use. It's just mathematically, the market is not moving in that direction and it's impossible. So I'd say those are the kind of the three key aha moments, if you will, where I started putting the pieces together to eventually say, you know what, there's a different and better way to do it. And I want to be the one to build it.
Yeah. And for someone that doesn't know what Kadea is, can you explain in your own words what Kadea is and its core mission?
Yeah. So my core mission at Kadea is to eliminate the need for single use packaging for all liquid consumer goods. And I want to do that by the time I die. That's a $4.6 trillion market. And by the way, it's responsible for over 5% of global emissions. 5%, 1/20th of global emissions, just because we are producing plastic containers made of petroleum, but more importantly, because we're moving water around.
Yeah.
And water's heavy. And we don't need to move water because we've got the tap infrastructure already in place in most of the planet. So Kadea, to get really like tangible and specific, we've designed these mini factories that look like vending machines and you interact with it just like a vending machine. So you go up to it. Right now we're focused on beverages. You choose what beverage you want. We're carrying all types of cold, non-alcoholic beverages that you know and love. And you get it in a stainless steel container, no plastic in it, and it gets vended fresh on demand in front of your eyes in 7 seconds. It's really fast. It's really convenient. It's really delicious. And when you're done, you drop the bottle back off to any of the stations in your network. So mm-hmm. Here in Chicago, it's like Divvy Bikes for bottles or bike sharing for bottles. Yeah. You just borrow the bottle. And then when you've returned the bottle, which we get 99% of the time back, the machine itself, the factory itself, inspects, washes, sanitizes, and dries the bottle to be refilled all over again. And it turns out by doing that, not only do we cut 99.9% of the plastic from that that economic sector, we also cut 80% of the water footprint and 75% of the carbon footprint. And most importantly, for living in a capitalist society and building a venture-backed business, we cut costs by a third. So we are less expensive than the single use status quo. And that's really important because that means that we can be cost competitive and deliver better margins for all of the players in the supply chain today. And that's what we've designed. We've designed a system that, like I talked about when I lived in China, that actually creates an incentive across the entire economy for people to want to move to reuse and away from the linear economy.
And I'm curious, why is sustainability personal to you right now?
You know, my husband asked that last night. He was like, why are you fighting so hard? Why does this matter so much? I'm not doing it for the money. It's like the money will come by doing something big and important and that I'm passionate about. It's really about proving to the world that we can build sustainable systems mm-hmm. that are cost competitive. You know, it's those little moments in my life that I know every other American and, you know, really almost every other human faces. When you walk by that trash can full of single-use plastic beverage containers, or you see a truck full, you know, delivering pallets of water, and you think, oh my God, not only is it double parked and it's creating air pollution right now on my street in my neighborhood that's going to affect kids, but also all of those bottles of water are full of microplastic. Mm-hmm. And why do we have to deliver that microplastic water? Because our lead pipes are not delivering safe water to our homes. And so it's really about living with empathy for the humans in my world and my community, and saying, you know, kids are not getting safe water. Older people are not getting safe water. Industrial workers are not getting safe water. That's not the democracy I want to grow up in. That's not the economic system I want to grow up in. And, you know, we live in, unfortunately, under an administration, a federal administration that's having people ask questions like, why would I do anything that's better for others? Why would I live with empathy? Right? Elon Musk says empathy is the downfall of Western civilization. I think empathy is the greatest power of the Western civilization. And it's something bigger than me, and it's something bigger than each and every one of us. And we have an opportunity to show that living in a world where we help other people can generate profits and can create a better environment, not just a kind of, you know, ecosystem, like, you know, the ambient, not like the air and the water. Yes, we can make a better ecosystem in that way, but I can also have better schools and walk down the street and feel safe and walk by people who are different than myself and want to help them. Those are okay. Like, that, when did it stop being American to care about each other? You know, it's just mind-boggling to me. So it really comes from a place of believing that there's a better way to do things, knowing there's a way to do things, knowing that we can generate profits by doing better for each other. And I want to prove that.
I mean, that answer alone proves to me that you're the right person to do this. So definitely supporting this mission. And I mean, you said a lot, but one thing to note is that for sure, water infrastructure is a big problem in the United States right now. And this is a bipartisan issue that communities are, you know, being brought together to essentially help with that. But we're definitely a long way from receiving, for everybody having equitable access to water, for sure. I wanted to ask really quick, I'm curious what CADEA stands for. What does CADEA mean?
Yeah. So CADEA in Portuguese means, it's part of the word supply chain. So CADEA de fornecimento. I like to say with CADEA, we are reimagining supply chains and starting a chain reaction for good. So I took that word CADEA and changed the spelling. In Portuguese, it would be CADEIA. And we changed the spelling so that it would be phonetic for English speakers. And then it turned out the .com was available for $1,600 and the trademark was available. So it kind of all worked out. Also, you know, the like holy grail in tech is that you have like a short word, you know, no more than six letters and 2 to 3 syllables. And the best companies, they end in A, right? It feels like uplifting and optimistic. So it all kind of fell into place. It was actually one of CADEA's repeat investors and biggest supporters is Supply Change Capital, you know, which is Shayna Harris here in Chicago and then Norma Cadena in LA. And I got introduced to them when they were still forming the fund. And I remember talking to Nora May in like 2018 or 2019. And I was like, oh my God, her last name is Cadena. And Cadena in Spanish, Cadena, right? It's like, it comes from chain also, like supply chain. Yep. I was like, how cool is it that she's starting a fund called Supply Change Capital, focus on supply chains. And her last name is Cadena. And my husband was like, well, what is it in Portuguese? I was like, Kadea? He was like, well, let's Google it. Let's see if anyone has the URL. So it kind of, it came from that of like these like little connections, you know, to finally be like, wait a second, this is a great word. And no one else, because there aren't that many Brazilian Americans, right?
Yeah.
Would have thought, oh, wait, I can take the word Kadea out of this context and put it in a new context. So I think that's a great example of like why being multilingual or bicultural, you know, or come from another place originally is a great power, because it gives you access to other references that people with maybe like one culture don't have.
And there's a piece of you there. So that's beautiful. Oh my God. Love that. All right. So I love how different Kadea's model is. It's not your typical vending machine, but I'm curious if you had a specific approach for balancing like the eco-friendliness with like making sure that the user experience was seamless as well.
Yeah. So the way I think about the ecological or eco-friendliness of it is it's just a design constraint. When you sit down to design a business, right, and do a business model and test a revenue model and test a user experience, I actually think constraints lead to better, more innovative solutions. If you have, right, they say necessity is the mother of invention. And that is a pretty central design philosophy. If you have every possibility available to you in the world and you don't have any constraints, it's very hard, I think, actually, to be forced to innovate. Mm-hmm. When you start layering in some constraints, that's when you have to become more creative and think in ways that aren't obvious, and therefore eventually get you to a more compelling and competitive model. And so I think of the sustainability piece as just being a design constraint. And what we said was, look, we're just not going to have single use. It's just a design constraint. It's not our business model. And that's where I think the reusables have gotten it wrong. You know, I know the people who founded Clean Canteen and Swell, and these are great companies, and they've created this awareness that single use isn't good for us or the planet. But I think they didn't go far enough. They said, oh, build reusables. Now we're going to sell reusables. And instead, what Kadea said was, look, we aren't going to sell single use, but we want to emulate single use because clearly it's working. Mm-hmm. I mean, single use packaged beverages, it's a $1.5 trillion market, growing at 7.5% CAGR annually. Reusables is a $10 billion market, growing at 4.4% CAGR. It just, reusables are not going to overtake single use ever at that rate, ever in our lifetimes.
Yeah.
And so it was a design constraint. And so anyone who's listening, think of sustainability just as being a way to force you to be more creative and more innovative in your business model and your revenue model and your product design. It doesn't have to be what you sell. You don't have to sell sustainability as a value proposition. And in fact, sustainability doesn't sell as a value proposition. It can be a cherry on top. It can be something that people feel good about. It can be ultimately a differentiator. But people won't pay more for sustainability. They won't take lower quality and they won't take lower convenience. And so for us, it's really just been a design constraint. And once we said, wait a second, we actually can design a business model where the container is reusable and really infinitely reusable, it was such an exciting opportunity because it forced us to think really creatively about how do we price, recognizing that the price has to be at parity or lower, has to be of equivalent quality or better, and has to be of equivalent convenience or better. Once you set those constraints, then you have this nice box that you can play around, a little sandbox that you can play inside of. And it forces you to do things in a way that people who maybe didn't take an idea far enough, it pushes you into a new category. And now actually Kadea is creating a new category. Yeah. And for anyone to try to compete against us will take them months, if not years. And it creates a lot of entrenched interests where incumbents want to participate in the Kadea ecosystem. And so I just, again, I'll encourage any listener out there, put sustainability as a design constraint. It will make your product better. It will make your business better. It will make it more entrenched, more competitive, more compelling.
I like that challenge for others. And speaking of challenges, what challenges have you faced in building a sustainable and scalable hardware product? Because it is a hardware product.
Yes, very much a hardware product. And, you know, being here in the Midwest, I think there's advantages to being a hardware solution, right? We're in the industrial heartland. What that means is my customers want and understand hardware products. It means that I've got the supply chain and the talent regionally to build hardware products. And in some ways, we've got financing that is supportive of hardware solutions. The challenge really, though, has been that hardware is, it's a different financing model than software or consumer packaged goods. There is an upfront R&D investment that takes some time. It doesn't take as long as biotech or medtech, but it takes longer than SaaS to get out into the market. Mm-hmm. And there is also, especially before you've proven the product can generate revenues, there is a CapEx payback period. Eventually, we'll be able to get different types of financing that will minimize the cost of CapEx. But in the beginning, Kadea has to front the cash to buy the materials, right? Yeah. And you know, so it's inventory and working capital that Kadea has to basically swallow and absorb. And that means from a cash flow perspective, we're in the beginning running really tight, you know, budgets, like very short time periods where we're managing and balancing every single dollar. We're getting through that phase. It's very exciting to be coming out of that. And that's one reason why we hired early on a CFO, COO to help us manage that cash flow really tightly. Mm-hmm. And be super like eagle-eyed on every dollar going out and why we should spend that and what does that allow us to then demonstrate and prove. But we're coming out of that phase now where we're done with R&D. We understand the CapEx model. We understand the payback period. And we're now bringing down the costs of getting these units out there. And once we turn that corner, it's going to be such an exciting opportunity, because hardware, once you turn that corner, you have much more competitive defensible moats. You get installed, so your churn is much lower, and you become a part of people's lives, like physically part of someone's mm-hmm. lives, and becomes part of their habits and behaviors and part of their environment. And so actually it's very sticky and exciting, because then you have a pathway and you've almost built your own distribution pathway. You don't have to rely on other partners as much. So I think the challenges that are inherent to hardware also become longer term a very exciting competitive advantage.
Yeah. And you kind of went there a little bit. I'm curious, did you start fundraising from the start, or did you bootstrap and then kind of, you know, build? And I'm assuming so. It's difficult to create something from scratch without any money, right? So I'm curious what was your fundraising journey like?
Yeah, we've been raising forever from the beginning. I did spend, you know, I mentioned 3 years while at Palantir helping to run a reusable water bottle program. So I had a lot of learnings and data from that experience. And then I was in business school for 2 years. So I took those 2 years to also test and research. So I went full-time June of 2020 upon graduating. I started raising right away. I started raising right away, and I raised on my first safe. I closed October 2020. So I basically like June to October raised, I think I raised 500,000, maybe 750,000. Yeah. And we've been raising iteratively. I think some people are lucky enough to go out with an idea and be able to raise millions. That was not me. So I had to raise a small chunk on a safe.
Yeah.
You know, build some product, get a prototype out there, get data, go back and raise again, build another prototype, pilot, get data, raise again, and do that sequentially. If I look backward, 5 to 10 years from now, I think the lesson learned is, if you're in hardware and you're listening, raise as much money as you can, because fundraising takes so much time and it takes time away from building your business. On the flip side, I couldn't have commanded a higher valuation, and to raise more capital would have meant even more dilution than I've taken. And so having to constantly go out and raise and then test and raise and then test did allow me to incrementally increase our valuation, minimize that dilution, and also, as I mentioned, be really, really scrappy and smart with how we spent every single dollar. Yeah. So I don't know. I think it's a double-sided coin. And I think we've done the absolute best that we could have done given the market conditions and what I was able to raise as a Latina immigrant female hardware founder in the Midwest in climate during like two wars and, a president who doesn't believe in sustainability. So
what could go wrong?
What could go wrong? Really, what could go wrong? Because I've already seen it.
Yeah, we're real.
What else could go wrong? Throw it at me. A meteor is going to strike. All right, let's do this.
I mean, all I'm hearing is like you're the actual living unicorn already. So that's what I'm hearing right now.
Love it.
Okay, so you mentioned Supply Chain Capital, which Shayna is based here in Chicago. So I want to talk a little bit about the Chicago ecosystem. What role has Chicago really played in your journey? Have you found good support here in Chicago as you build?
Yeah, I think there's a lot of searching that you have to do. What I like to say about Chicago, having grown up in the suburbs in Evanston and then come back 4 years ago after living in China and Brazil and New York, and so having some good reference points, I think Chicago is amazing because it's, there's like a real Midwestern kind of values here that like people say what they mean and mean what they say. In general, there's a lot, there can certainly be like, yeah, friendly, polite, and then nothing happens of it. But that you find that out pretty quickly, right? Like that person doesn't email you back or doesn't text you back. But for the most part, if someone says like, here's my card, call me, and you call them, they'll pick up and they'll talk to you. And like, there's not a lot of BS. And if someone says, hey, I'm an investor, they're an investor usually.
Yeah.
They might not have money, but they're an investor, whereas like, I definitely feel in other parts of the world, there's a lot more like showmanship and like bravado that you don't know if what people are saying is true and if what they mean is what they, if what they say is what they mean. So I really like that about Chicago. And the other positive I'll say about Chicago is that the venture and finance community here is very like brass tacks and it is more conservative, but from the beginning they were asking me, what's my revenue model? What are our margins going to be? Like, what's the business case for Kadea? So given these downturns that we talked about, like with the market, Kadea has been really ready to have those real brass tacks conversations, which I think a lot of hardware founders, maybe on the coasts, don't have to deal with for a long time because people throw money at ideas.
Yeah.
And that's where hardware companies fail, right? Because you got to know the numbers, you got to know the data period and unit economics and the margins. The flip side the other thing I love about Chicago, which I've come to appreciate over the years, is I feel like Chicago is kind of like an onion. And like, as you peel back there's a lot of layers to Chicago. Mm-hmm. And it is a big city, but it takes time to peel back those layers and to find the right people for you. But as you peel back the layers, like the inside gets sweeter, right? So like you got to invest time in like getting to know people and showing up every day. People are not looking for tourists, right? Like they want someone who's here building in Chicago and it's not just like a fly-by-night kind of situation. I think the flip side of it is like, if you have a big moonshot idea that's going to take time to validate, like, it's hard to find people who will fund you in the beginning, you know? So I have spent a lot of time on planes on the coasts, and a lot of our capital has come from the coasts, of people who are kind of willing to hear me out and be like, she seems legit. She's committed. She's passionate. She's hardworking. She answered my questions. Like, we don't know if this is real, but she seems to know what she's doing. I'm going to, you know, I'm going to put a flag in the ground and stake a bet on her. So that's been really valuable coming from outside of Chicago.
Yeah. Chicago is small and the venture capital community is even smaller, it feels like.
Yes.
But in terms of other organizations or just other partners, right, in the ecosystem, have you received mentorship or some sort of like contracts or, you know, just anything that has supported you that is not funding?
Yeah. Almost all of our customer commitments, we have deposits received on 27 machines. Almost all of that is just here within a 3-hour drive of Chicago. And we've also been like very clear that that's what we wanted and that's what we fought for. So like Turner Construction, for example, is committed to 5 machines. And they're a global construction general contractor. And we've said, like, we want those machines in Chicago. So, like, we've pushed them to do the work to find those locations for us. And they've been willing partners on that. So definitely, like, the fact that there's, like, a strong industrial market here. And then I think just the community, like, the ecosystem, as you mentioned, like, people want to support big wins here in Chicago. And I feel like that has been really incredible to have that kind of, you know, wind beneath my wings kind of thing that like in New York or maybe California, maybe it would have been harder to stand out. And here again, because people mean what they say and say what they mean, right? Like they see me showing up, they see that I mean what I say and say what I mean. So people are willing to kind of support me and back me and amplify the Kadea story as well. So I think it's been a lot of like, people just being like, we're here to support you. How can we try to help you? I'm very excited, as you mentioned, like water infrastructure. I think Current winning that $160 million NSF engine grant is amazing. So putting Chicago and the Midwest on the map for water tech. MHUB, you know, is really focused on now supporting that vision as well. And like the university ecosystem. Illinois has the Invent Venture program. So we've gotten funding from that. We're submitting an application for the Illinois Innovation Voucher. So there's like these pockets of support. You definitely have to like dig in. You can't just do like a Google search, right? You got to be talking to people and hustling and hearing what's going on. But there's like these pockets that, again, if you're willing to be scrappy, put in the time and effort, like you can find support.
Agreed. It's, you have to be willing to go find the resources and not be afraid of asking for help too. I was smiling over here when you were talking about how Turner, vouched for 5, because I think when we talked in 2022, I don't remember if you really had many out there yet.
No.
You were just almost getting really started.
Yes. Yeah. October 2022. We deployed our first prototype in an industrial environment, and that was with Gilbain Construction.
And that was
in downtown Indianapolis. And that was also thanks to being in Chicago, because I remember I sat down, I met a woman who works at Gilbain Construction and Ezgi Kasaroseglu, and she's here in Chicago. And she was like, I can't get you into a white collar office, Manuela, but I could get a Kadea onto a construction site tomorrow. And I was like, what did you say? So, you know, when that sounds like such a casual thing if you're not an entrepreneur or a founder, but when someone says like, we want your product and we want it tomorrow, it's huge. It's like, it's real, like, learning to hear those signals is really important. And I heard that and I was like, oh my God. And when I finally was like, yeah, let's do it, we were installed 3 weeks later in downtown Indianapolis in the largest healthcare construction project in the United States. And that project executive asked to buy the machine. And since then, We were deployed for 2 years, revenue generating on that construction site with like an early prototype that didn't do everything. And then they've asked for 10 units. So like, you know, that's an example of like being like in the Midwest, knowing if this is the right environment for your kind of product and the problem you're solving. But for Kadee, it really is the right environment for us. And all of those opportunities and those conversations and those little signals were only available to us because we were building here in Chicago.
And that early on, you had glass bottles, right?
Yeah, we had glass bottles. We were only doing flat, still water. Yeah. And we it was like a pain in the butt to order a beverage on the machine. It was like a super like multi-step process. And even then we were outperforming the single-use solution. And even then customers were like, I want your machine.
Yeah.
So that those are the signals as a founder listening, like those are the signals that you're looking for is like you're approximating what your product eventually can become. And it's not there yet and it's not perfect, but you've hit on something that the market wants and the market starts being like, wait, I want to buy that. When is it going to be ready? Can I have it tomorrow? Wait, I want to keep this for 2 years. I want to pay for it, even though it's not perfect and keeps breaking. Like those are the things that you want to be gathering. And that goes back, you know, Cecilia, to your earlier question of like, you know, the challenges of raising money. The upside of it was that I had to be super lean and I had to make choices about the product to figure out, like, boil it down. What is the fundamental that like element and features that we have to include? And by doing that exercise, really learning like, okay, we're onto something here because people are putting money down to get this machine that doesn't even exist yet.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, you clearly learned a lot while building Kadee. Like what would you say? I mean, I'm going to make it hard, right?
Never like, ending.
What would you tell other founders that are looking to make impact as well in their respective fields?
Start talking to people about your idea. And maybe you don't yet have an idea. Like maybe it's just a problem that you're noticing. I'm noticing that, I don't know, it's really annoying to go to take the L train that you have to always like go and pay for a ticket at the machine, you know, like that seems really silly or whatever pain keeps showing up in your life, like just the day-to-day stuff and starting to pay attention, like, okay, wait, why does that keep happening to me? And then once you understand why it's happening to you, start seeing, is it happening to other people? Are other people experiencing this problem? And then why are they experiencing this problem? Is this a problem then that I can identify where the problem is coming from? And where is there an opportunity for me to kind of like step into the problem? And I'm the kind of person, I'm an introvert. So it was very hard for me in the beginning to like just strike up conversations with people or present and pitch ideas. But I've also learned as an introvert that I learn best hearing other people and forcing myself to talk about something. Right. So I would say in the beginning, like with Kadee, like, yeah, why are we producing a new container for every single packaged beverage? Why can't I just dispense you a beverage? And then I would say that to people and people would be like, well, yeah, but are you going to give me a reusable bottle? Like, how are you going to clean it? Yeah. You know? So hearing that is like, oh, right. That's a problem. I'm going to need to figure out if I want to get rid of single use. So I guess to boil down the point of what I've just said is talk to people. Hey, it's really annoying every time I have to go through that turnstile to get on the L train, right? Just say that casually over a drink with your, you know, with your friend or at dinner with your sister and see how they respond. And if they're like, what are you talking about? I just use my iPhone.
Yeah.
You know, I just tap it. And you're like, oh, okay. Well, actually, it seems like there's already a solution for that. Right.
Yeah.
So maybe that's not the problem to solve. But like, keep bringing up these problems that you're noticing and see how other people respond. Is it a problem for them as well? How are they solving for it now? Is it a big enough problem? worth you then dedicating, you know, 5, 10, 15 years to solving? Is the market big enough? Are there enough people who have that problem? Who are those people who are having that problem? So I'd say, like, talk to people. And a lot of times, first-time founders will say, oh, well, I have this idea, but I don't want to tell anyone because they're going to copy it. No one's going to copy your idea. If you're passionate about it and you figure out a creative way to solve for it, there is something inside of that idea, and you're never going to improve that idea if you don't talk about it. So your idea will die.
Yeah.
Anyway.
Yeah.
Ideas are a dime a dozen. Figuring out how to solve it and build around it, that's where you start building competitive moats. So you got to talk about it. No one's going to steal your idea if they're not passionate about it like you.
Mm-hmm.
You know, the only way your idea is going to improve is through talking about it. And yes, part of your challenge then is going to be figure out how to make it competitive enough that if you tell someone your idea, they can't just copy it.
Yeah. And all of that encompass was brought me back your point about necessity is the mother of invention. Is that what you said?
Yeah, exactly.
I'm like, yeah, you're right. That's it. All right, let's start wrapping up. Curious, what's next for Kadeya? You know, any big launches, pilots, or more, you know, scaling milestones coming up for you?
Yeah, I'm so excited about the next 6, 12, 18 months for us. It's going to be a huge turning point. So we finished R&D. The machine does everything that I told you guys that it does in the beginning. It dispenses you all types of cold, non-alcoholic beverages, sparkling beverages, flavored beverages, functional beverages. And then it accepts your bottle back and inspects, washes, sanitizes, and dries it. Like, it's doing that, all of that, over and over and over again. So getting those first 3 to 5 machines out in the field, that's our homework by the end of the year. So they're in market, revenue generating with amazing customers. And then we really just want to repeat that to show that it's a repeatable process, whether that's the operations, the manufacturing, the revenue model. And then after about 12 months and we have good data on those machines in the field, you know, getting out there to raise a really big round to start scaling is what we're up to, you know? So it's going to really go from people being like, yeah, I've been hearing about Kadeya, but I've never seen one of their machines, to being like, oh yeah, remember Kadeya? Like, they're out there generating millions of dollars. They can't keep up with demand. You want to see a machine, you got to go to this location, go to their website. You can go get the best sparkling water in the world. Like, it's going to be real in the next, you know, year.
Love that.
So I'm very excited about that.
I guess, and to that point of where they are right now, like, you have several, but are there some in the city as well, or are they mostly in construction sites?
Yeah, so they all have been going to industrial work sites. That's our beachhead market, and it's a big enough market to keep us going for a really long time. So construction sites, fulfillment centers, factories, and military bases, that's really our sweet spot. There's a few other environments that we're going to pilot in as well, maybe a hospital, maybe a university campus, maybe a movie theater or a shopping mall. So in those pilot cases, that's where, like, the kind of average consumer would be able to go and get a beverage. But I think we'll probably do some, like, open to the public demos with some of our clients, like maybe with Turner Construction, that they would, like, let people come onto the construction site and, like, interact with the Kadeya machine. So yeah, we're definitely a B2B solution, which means that, you know, these are going to be enclosed environments for the near future, but we're going to be thinking creatively of how to allow the public to interact and see the machines in action.
Yeah. Well, Manuela, this has been so lovely to catch up with you all the time. So for anyone that anyone that wants to connect with you, how can they find you? Where can they find more information about Kadeya?
Yeah. Well, I'm very active on LinkedIn, and I accept almost any request. If you're from Chicago, for sure. And you have a face, like a picture and a title. So please, like, reach out, connect me, message me. I do respond to all of my messages there. And then, you know, you can sign up for our newsletter. If you just go to, like, kadeya.com, scroll to the bottom of the website. We send out really short updates just so you know, like where we were presenting, where we will be presenting, you know, any like recent developments with the business, anything in the news that we're watching. So I definitely recommend like sign up for our newsletter and like keep up to date. We're a super transparent team. You know, you've seen like we're building in public. We're sharing our wins and our losses in public with everybody. So please follow along and, you know, be part of our success and help us eliminate the need for single-use beverage containers forever.
I'm so excited for you. You're one of my favorite founders in Chicago.
Yay! Thank you. I appreciate that.
I'm not afraid of saying that either.
Yeah.
Publicly.
I love it.
Well, thank you so much for joining me. I love this conversation and wishing you the best of luck in all the things that you're working on. And yeah, I definitely will try Kadeya very soon. I did try it back when it was at TechNexus.
Yeah.
A couple of times.
Just water in a glass bottle.
Water. I had the best water back then. I'm sure I'm going to have the best sparkling water later.
Good. It's like all I drink all day. It's the
I
best.
Love it.
Thank you so much, okay. Cecilia. Talk to you soon.
Yep. Thank you.
Thank you for listening to this week's episode of the Chicago Techies podcast. If you enjoy listening, don't forget to subscribe, share, and leave a review on iTunes. Let's continue the conversation on social media. We are at Chicago Techies on all social media platforms. Thank you again, and we'll see you next time.